This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
All right, welcome to Eco Radio KC. My name is Mike Murphy. We've got a packed show today. We're going to hear from John Kerman talking about the Keystone XL pipeline pledge of resistance. We're going to hear some from Season about the Mother Earth News Fair. Also, we'll hear some audio from the March Against Monsanto in Kansas City. And Richard Mabian will be talking to Klaus from the Missouri Sierra Club about the Beyond Coal and other things here on Eco Radio. First, this news.
Philip Ross reported today for the International Business Times that our prehistoric cave-dwelling ancestors also lived by the three R's: reduce, reuse, recycle. Scholars from 10 countries gathered for a conference in Israel last week, cleverly titled The Origins of Recycling, to share notes about recycling in the ancient world. According to phys.org, there is a mounting evidence that recycling was around hundreds of thousands of years ago, and that prehistoric cave people deliberately conserved and reused objects from their everyday lives. They even repurposed broken or discarded tools made of bone and flint to create new utensils, researchers said. Researchers pinpointed various excavation sites throughout the world where signs of prehistoric recycling were revealed. Kesem Cave, an archaeological site as old as 420,000 years near Tel Aviv in Israel, yielded evidence of flint chips being remade into tiny blades to cut up meat. Other sites in Spain, North Africa, and Italy produced similar examples of prehistoric repurposing. There's evidence that Neanderthals, close relatives of modern humans who inhabited Europe beginning as long as 600,000 years ago, near Rome, shattered elephant bones to extract marrow and even shaped the fragments into tools. These tools were abandoned but picked up later to be reworked and used again, said Giovanni Boschian, a geologist from the University of Pisa, according to IOL SciTech. The discovery of possible ancient recycling comes on the heels of a paper published in August in which researchers in Europe argued that Neanderthals weren't the blockheads popular culture makes them out to be. Instead, the finding of sophisticated bone tools in southwestern France points to the Neanderthals' developed understanding of tool creation, according to the Associated Press's report via FoxNews.com. The Guardian reported Sunday that Britain's Water Frameworks Directive is breathing life back into the nation's waterways by restoring hundreds of rivers to their natural glory by 2027. To Victorian and Edwardian industrialists, rivers, apart from supplying water for dye works or taking away waste, were considered to be inconveniences and so were diverted, often underground. The end result was the creation of a network of lost rivers across the nation. In London, it is believed that there are at least 20 lost rivers that were buried to allow the city to expand, for example. These include the Tyburn, Ephra, and Fleet. Many of these will have to remain underground, such as the extent of the capital's expansion, but a few have already been rescued. Other lost rivers targeted for restoration include the Calder in Burnley, the Salmon's Brook, a key tributary of the Lea in Enfield, and the Wensum in Norfolk. All these projects are backed by the Environment Agency, which has pledged to restore 9,500 miles of river nationally with the help of other organizations. However, it is the Medlock restoration in Birmingham that attracts particular attention, for it is intended to be a model for other cleanups. As part of the project, all 8 million of the bright red bricks that were used to create the river's culvert through Phillips Park, one of the nation's first municipal parks, are being ripped up. These are Accrington bricks, made in Lancashire, and their kind were used for the foundations of the Blackpool Tower and the Empire State Building. Such was their reputation for strength. Remarkably, those dug up from the Medlock look new, despite having been immersed in running water for more than 100 years. Joe Fraser, of project partner The Groundwork Trust, said, quote, "The Medlock is known locally as the Red River because of those bright Accrington bricks. However, we are going to change that. We are going to turn it blue again." Unquote. Once the bricks are removed and concrete foundations dug up, the river will no longer be confined to a narrow channel. It will become wider and shallower and will start to meander along its own course. Weirs will be ripped up, with the result that the flow of water will slow down. Fish will be able to swim up the Medlock again, and plants should start to grow on the riverbed. Workers have already spotted brown trout and kingfishers. For more information on any of our stories, find EcoRadio KC on Facebook and Twitter, where we'll post links to some of our sources. While you're visiting, we invite you to like and follow us. And now, on with the show.
So that's your big exciting news for today. And now in studio, I've got John Kerman, who's going to tell us a little bit about the Keystone XL Pledge of Resistance. Now, John, we've heard about the Keystone XL pipeline and all this incredible controversy that's around it, continues to surround it. Can you tell us a little bit about this Pledge of Resistance? Who's behind it? Where did it come from? Where is it going?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. So Keystone XL has been a big battle over the last 2 years, a little more than 2 years now. It's been a sort of a focal point of the battle to keep as much of the tar sands in the ground as possible. And this idea for the Pledge of Resistance comes from three organizations working together. Credo, which is the sort of hybrid cell phone activist company.
Mm-hmm.
Rainforest Action Network, which, of course, it's obvious from the name what they do, but they have long used direct action tactics in their work, and a group called The Other 98%. And it came from a realization that if we kept going through the normal channels of politely asking the president to reject the application for Keystone XL, that we were probably going to lose, that it was probably going to be approved and built. And so there was this realization both on the part of 350.org, which has staged civil disobedience at the White House around the Keystone XL pipeline, and Credo, and 350.org supports this effort by Credo with a pledge of resistance. Basically, what the pledge does is it calls on people to pledge to commit to engage in peaceful, dignified civil disobedience should it become necessary. And by that, necessary would be if the State Department were to rule that building the Keystone XL pipeline is in the national interest. If the State Department does that, that's a clear signal that President Obama plans to approve it, because the State Department, being essentially employees of President Obama, is not going to make a determination about the Keystone XL, which is in conflict with what the president wants to do.
Well, and we're expecting to hear some sort of decision or an indication sometime in January, aren't we?
Well, it's kind of up in the air. So we were expecting to probably get the final environmental impact statement on Keystone XL released in August.
Mm.
But that hasn't happened. That may have something to do with the fact that the company, the consulting firm that wrote that for the State Department, had some pretty serious conflicts of interest, had previously worked for the corporation that wants to build Keystone XL, has lots of oil industry ties to companies that have an interest in exploiting the tar sands.
Right.
And
our listeners will recall an allusion to that on a previous show.
Yeah. So there's an Inspector General's investigation of those conflicts of interest now. So it's possible that environmental impact statement will not be released until that investigation is over. But we don't know. It could be released at any time. Whenever it is released, that kicks off a 90-day period, at which the end of which the State Department is going to make this determination as to whether or not the pipeline's in the national interest. Again, if they decide it's in the national interest,
mm-hmm.
then these actions. And so far, more than 70,000 people have signed this pledge of resistance.
Wow.
And if this were to take place, it would be unprecedented. There wouldn't have been anything like the wave of actions that will take place if the State Department rules Keystone XL is in the national interest. Now, we hope that simply by making clear our determination to risk arrest in civil disobedience actions, that will be enough to convince President Obama to talk to the folks at the State Department and make sure they rule it's not in the national interest,
mm-hmm.
in which case this will all be over, and the Keystone XL pipeline will not be built. But there are plans in the works to have a local action where folks will risk arrest and civil disobedience. It's a dignified, peaceful civil disobedience, no breaking anything, no hurting anybody, no resisting arrest, but still risking arrest to make clear that we must not build this Keystone XL pipeline because it's been described as a fuse to the second biggest carbon bomb on the planet. The consequences of exploiting those tar sands would be disastrous for the climate. So
wow.
We don't need to be building big new pipelines to get that stuff to market.
Now, are there any mirroring protests happening up in Canada?
Well, there's certainly been fierce opposition to exploitation of the tar sands and to new pipeline proposals in Canada.
Okay.
Fierce opposition by the First Nations, Indigenous nations there, who have so far been successful, along with environmentalists in Canada, in preventing a proposal called Northern Gateway, which would be a pipeline from Alberta, the province where the tar sands are located, to the British Columbian coast, the west coast of Canada.
Oh, I see.
So there's a plan to do that. That's a different corporation, Enbridge. There's a plan to expand another pipeline to that west coast, plans to take it to the east coast of Canada. But wherever companies are trying to find a route to get more and more tar sands to market, and that's what they want to do, is get it to the global market. We're already using as much as we really need here in the U.S. and Canada, so
right.
They want to sell it on the world market. They're being fought. Those plans are being fought, and so far we've stymied them.
Wow.
But we still have a ways to go, and we'd love to have more people sign that Pledge of Resistance. If you're interested in learning more about the Pledge of Resistance, you can go to nokxl.org. NoKXL.org. You can learn about it and read the text of the pledge yourself and decide whether or not you're willing. And there are roles for people to play who don't want to risk arrest or for whatever reason can't risk arrest either.
Right, right. And as you're always so good about posting things on the Eco Radio Facebook page, I'm sure you'll have that front and center.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thanks so much, John.
You're welcome.
Well, that was John Kerman telling us about the Keystone XL Pledge of Resistance. I, for one, hope I get the courage to do that. Arrest is certainly an ominous-sounding thing, but there are times in one's life where such things do become important enough. So I hope that our listeners will at least consider the possibilities, even if they don't decide to go ahead and sign the pledge, they find some other way to stay involved, because it is a very important issue. So now we're going to move on to my little report. I visited the 2013 Mother Earth News Fair this weekend. It was just amazing. The Mother Earth News magazine has been published since 1970, and its bimonthly issues reach over 500,000 people, covering environmental problems from a down-to-earth, practical, simple living, how-to viewpoint. Mother Earth News has been a pioneer over the past 40-odd years in the promotion of renewable energy, recycling, family farms, progressive agricultural practices, better eating habits, medical self-care, all sorts of things. And although the magazine has been based in Topeka, Kansas since 2001, its first Mother Earth News Fair was held in 2010 in Seven Springs, Pennsylvania. But now in its fourth year, the fun has returned home to the heartland with this weekend's fair in Lawrence. With 2 days stuffed to the brim with workshops, speakers, vendors of all stripes, the fair had plenty to keep the throngs of local sustainability enthusiasts busy. 8 stages scattered all around Watson Park held workshops covering topics ranging from how to raise various kinds of livestock, basic homesteading skills, herbal medicines, organic growing from backyard to multi-acre farms, and renewable energy innovations of all stripes. The Kids Treehouse stage hosted activities which connected children to basic homesteading skills and knowledge while also being fun. Homemade soft cheese, anyone? And besides what was happening on stage, many vendors had their own demonstrations going at various times throughout the weekend. One vendor mentioned that better publicity for such demonstrations would have been appreciated, but she understood how overwhelming things can get with so much going on all at once. The vendors at the fair were a well-mixed bunch. I saw several different sorts of solar cookers being shown off, one of which has a Kickstarter campaign going right now. So if you're curious about that, you can certainly check out the Mother Earth News Fair list of exhibitors and look them up. At the Grainmaker booth, guests were invited to try their hand at grinding flour from various grains, nuts, and legumes using these old-fashioned cast-iron hand-cranked mills proudly made here in the U.S. There were several beekeeping demonstrators, most with interesting value-added products for sale. I bought a tin of handmade beeswax lotion bar from the Kelzer Bee Farm after being assured it would aid in my recovery from my third brush with poison ivy this summer. Fingers crossed. Besides the vendors who had products to sell, there were many booths scattered about for organizations hoping to bring more of the fair-going public into their various corners of the sustainability flock. One of these organizations which I happened upon was the Kansas Barn Alliance, where Susie Haver and Sally Hatcher shared with me a couple stories about Kansas barns which had been rehabbed and given new life. Sally told me that the Kansas Barn Alliance is there, quote, to let people know that there is an organization, or rather a network. They would try to guide them to workers that can help them repair a barn if that's what's needed, and usually that is what's needed. And, of course, they're here to welcome, they're here to listen to people's barn stories of people who are using their barn in perhaps a new way, or perhaps with animals. And this is a perfect audience for finding those people who are using the older buildings rather than putting up new metal ones. Sally and Susie then showed me a few before and after photos of barns which had gotten a second life. Two of the three are now being used as event spaces. The third, which originated on the owner's family farm back in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, was dismantled, transported to Heston, Kansas, and rebuilt there. Sally mentioned that the owner also hauled enough of the original stone to face the barn's new concrete foundation, and that since Heston isn't nearly as hilly as Pennsylvania, a hill had to be specially built to hold the bank-style barn. It's really, really a beautiful structure. And now it's being used not only for family purposes, but they're going to start using it as an event space as well. Down the ways a bit, I turned a corner and met the placid gaze of a mammoth donkey, which was as tall as I am. That's 6 feet, people. And a few feet away was a beautiful goat sporting an enormous green backpack, looking for all the world like it was ready to hit the trail. Peeking into the large Paradise Ranch Adventures tent, I discovered a whole lineup of goats, all resplendent in their long, graceful horns, patiently checking out the crowds of curious adults and eager children and submitting gracefully to the odd scratch between the horns. Ricky Ziegler gave me the lowdown on Paradise Ranch's operation. They use a variety of goat breeds, including Tagenbergs, Oberhasslies, Sanins, Nubians, a Saber, and Alpines, all of which are bred for their height and their width. Ricky told me that they try to promote goat packing itself, the fact that you can use goats for more than just eating brush at your house. Poison ivy at my house. Come on over, guys. Or milking goats. They're also great companions, and they can carry a third of their body weight when they've been properly conditioned. So they're really useful in carrying camping equipment into the woods for a hiking trip, things you normally necessarily wouldn't take yourself to carry. They're also good for carrying things out of the woods to go in and do cleanup days on trails, to clear trees out of the way, and so on and so forth. They can also drag things and pull things, and they're just useful for a lot of different reasons. She said children were really excited just to hang out and pet with the goats, but Ricky told me that their parents were the ones who found the idea of having a goat along to pack camping gear in and out of the wilds to be exciting. For those who want to try the idea out before taking the plunge with their own family goat, Paradise Ranch offers visit days where folks can come take a tour of the farm, get to know some of the goats, learn how to pack a goat properly, and then actually go on a hike. And on occasions, they will offer an overnight camping trip as well. And it's all-inclusive, and you just show up, and they take care of everything. And it sounds like a really nice ladies' weekend. Being an avid yardener myself with an ever-evolving edible landscape, my eye was caught by the display of Ollas at the Dripping Springs Ollas booth. I chatted a moment with Lori Haynes, who shared this interesting drought-combating method of garden irrigation with me. So an olla, and that's spelled O-L-L-A, is a round, unglazed terracotta pot with a wide neck that you pour water into. You bury the pot in your planting bed, and then you plant around it. And then when you add water into the pot, the water seeps through the wall of the pot to the root of the plant. So it's small-scale, subsurface irrigation, and the roots will eventually grow toward the pot and then pull out more as needed. So there's some self-regulation. If the ground is saturated, you're not losing as much water, and if it's drier, the roots would be pulling out more as they need it. Also, having the water source deeper underground would encourage root growth downward rather than upward, as is the tendency with surface watering. This is especially helpful in drought-prone areas, and we've all seen our share of that. Lori said that, now she's based in Texas, so she said Oyers can be used in any sort of small-scale growing situation with annuals and perennials and even with young trees, although you'd want to unearth the Oya before the growing tree's roots grow into it. But they may be a little more user-friendly in areas of the country which don't have terribly cold winters, otherwise you'd have to dig it up before the frozen soil breaks the pot. The people attending the fair looked to be from all walks of life, and all age groups were solidly represented. It was really refreshing to see so many younger people wandering around attentively eyeing displays and listening to the various speakers rather than being absorbed by their various electronic devices. I know that makes me sound like a cranky old lady. And it was very encouraging to this 30-something yardener when Joel Salatin, the final keynote speaker yesterday afternoon, encouraged the development of partnerships between older landowners / farmers and younger people seeking a way out of the drudgery of Cubicleville, and also between growers and people with other talents, graphic designers, marketers, accountants, etc., to create what he called symbiotic partnership fiefdoms that function together holistically to raise everyone's level of success. The other fair attendees I chatted with seemed enthusiastic about what they discovered at the fair. Jill Becker and Terry Rive, who hail from central Kansas, said that they were pleasantly surprised at the size of the fair and the diversity of topics being presented and the vendors. Being livestock and veggie growers themselves, as well as, for Jill, beekeeping, they were most interested in the workshops that focused on herbal medicines, enhancing growing through organic soil cultivation methods, and the apiarist presentations. Their only lament was that they had to leave the fairgrounds to find any food to eat. The Lawrence Journal World reports that Mother Earth News plans to bring the fair back to Lawrence in 2014, so perhaps next year we'll have an area where local farm-to-fork eateries can tame the rumbling tummies of fairgoers. With its first year's growing pains ironed out, next year's fair is sure to be a grand success. I'm Susan Burnett for Eco Radio KC on KKFI, and now I'm turning it back over to...
Thanks, Susan. That was a fascinating story. It was like I was there. Good work there. Another thing going on this weekend was the March Against Monsanto. There was an event here in Kansas City as well, and one in Lawrence. The big one was, of course, in St. Louis, and we haven't gotten any reports from that. But both Lawrence and Kansas City had about 50 to 60 people, and we're going to hear now from one of the speakers, Moses Brings Plenty, and you can also see the video for this YouTube on our Facebook page, so you can check that out, courtesy of Mike Checks, Mike Nichols.
Good afternoon. My name is Moses Brings Plenty. I come from the people of the original inhabitants of this continent. Ash na ku hena le oyate ki hena wa oshila hecha. Ash he hobetu ki hena wa katika tu kashla we chose ni ki hena le omani ki hena. What I said in the original language of this continent is my name is Moses Brings Plenty, and I ask for blessings for each and every one of you. I guarantee you Monsanto did not get started by holding signs standing alongside of a street. How did Monsanto get started? How did Monsanto manage to protect themselves? Is by electing individuals into the government. The government does not belong to you. The government does not belong to me. The government does not protect you, nor will it protect me. Ask me, while I'm an Indian. I am an Indian. I was born a prisoner of war against my own will. And I am a war to the United States government. So if anything you want to understand, anything about the United States government, ask me. I can share everything that I come to know and understand and that I live every single day of my life. We are doing this not for us, but for these children. How are we going to protect these children? Because these children are everything. They are tomorrow. We are just merely here today. It is their world, and it is their grandchildren's grandchildren's world. It ain't mine. It ain't yours. It is theirs. So we understand this thing. I look around. It's pretty sad that this place isn't packed. Why is that sad? Because too many people are worried about a stinking football team, whether or not they're going to go undefeated. Too many people are worried about fascism. Well, fascism basically is capitalism. And at some point, if we are not careful, we're not going to be able to have athletes outside. We're not even going to be able to stand outside. You look at the water. Boy, that's a sad sight. Die the water. We're going to die water. Why are we going to continue to poison the water? Because it's not like some amazing spaceship comes and delivers us fresh water every 500, every 5,000 years. The water that we have today is all the water that any generation will ever have in their life. It's a reality. And the reality is, we need to start. You know what your right is? You have the right to vote. Right? So what are you going to utilize that right to vote? Yeah, I'm ready to be congressman. I'm ready to be president. Because I know for a fact that this is not an Indian issue. This is not a Caucasian issue. This is not an Asian issue. It's a people issue. It is about the human race, the population of the people, because we have this thing called Obamacare. Well, how about we just turn it around and design a bill and design a law and protect the environment? If we can protect the environment, we're going to have no more health issues. You have the rise of diabetes. You have the rise of cancers ever since GMO, ever since Monsanto's. Tobacco has been here from the very beginning of time and has always been safe and pure until man got a hold of it. Sorry. Why? Because my people have always used tobacco, and we still use tobacco today. We use it to pray with. And the original instructions that the Great Spirit has given our people, and the language that you heard is not my language. It is the language of the Creator who gave it to the original creation, which man is not a part of yet, because we have to earn that right today. We earn that right by how we live on a daily basis. I live knowing that what I do today is going to affect the generations to come. So how are we going to make a difference? Pick someone. Pick someone. Look at this small group. This small group can change the world, can change this country. Every state is supposed to be independent, right? Well, how about we start in this state by banning Monsanto's? How are you going to ban Monsanto's? You elect senators, congressmen and governors, you elect politicians, people into the government system that can protect the citizens of this state. If you get it done in this state, then I'll guarantee you the neighboring states are going to begin to do the same thing. So how about we just use the blueprint, the platform that Monsanto's had used to protect them and other corporations? I'll tell you what. If we brought back the mom-and-pop businesses, we would never have to worry about an economical shutdown or a government shutdown again. Why? Because this country is about we the people. We the people. It ain't about Walmart. It ain't about Sam's Club. It's not about some huge corporation. And as long as we the people participate and purchase things from these businesses, they will always remain a business. If there is no customers for a store, what happens? They shut down. And so I look around and I commend every single individual who ever plants their own garden. I commend you. Keep doing it. Don't give up. Because one person can change the world. How do I know that? Because Adolf Hitler did it. How else do I know that? Saddam Hussein did it. So if one individual can change the world, well, why can't one good person change the world? Well, we can. We just choose not to do it. And so I'm gonna do what I can. I'm not saying I want to be president, but I know that I'm ready for it. And wouldn't it be something to have an original Indian in his original homeland be a president of the people? Can we make that happen? Yes, because you know what? I care about these children. They're not my flesh and blood, but they're still my children. That is my responsibility. Everything that I do in my life is for them. It ain't for me. It ain't about me. My life does not belong to me. It belongs to them. And that's how we need to live as individuals. Live with that understanding that every time you see the sunset, know for a fact that God has blessed you with the ability to see the generations yet to come. To see the generations yet to come. And if you are serious, as I am serious, We can make a difference. We can make it about the people again. The Constitution, we need people in Congress. We need people within the government who will stand true to the Constitution. Well, I'm sorry, Obama. I'm sorry. I don't think Obama is. Obama, I'm not about money. You can ask my wife. I hate money.
Yeah.
I really, honestly, truly do. I hate money with a passion. I don't even like to touch it. That's what it means to me, because $100 billion cannot replace one child's life. $1 trillion cannot replace another adult's life. It cannot replace life. It can't even replace the life of this tree. It can't. And so we have a reality, we have a time, and the time is now. It's not tomorrow, it's not next week. In fact, it was last week is the time. And so we have to wake up, and I agree, if we can do that, get to understand them, go support them. That's a group that's doing something. Continue to support one another. I'm not right. I'm not the one that has all the answers. It takes all of us, every single one of us, to create a beautiful answer. And the beautiful answer is life. It is about life, and it is about tomorrow. And that is the reality of the life. And so, again, in the concept today that I can make a difference. You can make a difference. Every single one of us. Again, there is only one creation that could live without water. That can live without water. Anyone know what it is? Who it is? Who?
Cockroach?
Nope. Even a cockroach needs water. The stone people, the very first of creation, is the only creation that can live without water. The rest of us, we need water. Last I knew and last I checked. And so again, we have an opportunity and a chance. I'm not angry, I'm passionate. I know I probably sound like I'm angry, but I'm passionate. Because I care about the generations to come. That's where my love is. And that is the understanding of love. And so again, we can do this all together. As the people. As the people. Time to strip ourselves of these labels. Well, I'm an Indian man. No, I'm a human being. You're not a white woman, you're a human being, you're a woman. An amazing gift to the society, an amazing gift to the people. So we have to strip ourselves of these ridiculous labels that this industrial education has taught us and get back to the true teachers of life, and the one that's standing right here. It is the reality of life. And so you think about it. No human being is born with language. They have a language, and they shared it with us. No human being has been born with the knowledge and an understanding. They've been born with the knowledge and understanding. When a baby deer is born, it is born with the ability to speak its own language and its ability, the wisdom to be able to walk in a matter of minutes from the time of its birth, and it knows exactly what to do the moment it becomes hungry. To me, that is intelligence. To me, that is the highest intelligence, so that's where I want to be, and that's who I want to be like, to understand and how to coexist. Man did not create this world. Chief Seattle said, man did not create the web of life. We are nothing but just a single strand in this web of life. And if one strand is affected, the whole web is affected. And so we have become the cancer. Well, maybe this is the earth's way of telling us, this is what you're doing to me, so we have cancer. I know people that have cancer, and I've never ever heard of it when I was a child growing up. So we need to change that, because I want these children to never understand what cancer is. I want these children to never understand what Alzheimer's is. What? Monsanto, thank you for bringing us and making us patients. Well, I don't want to be a patient. I want to be a healer of the earth. I want to be a healer of mankind. I want to be a healer of society. And we, the community, is the only one that can make that difference. How many people, what's the population in Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri? Millions. Well, where are they all at? Well, I'm looking at them. I'm looking at actual human beings, and I want to say thank you for choosing to be a human being today. That's all I got to say. Have a wonderful day.
Kansas City Marathon will take place October 19th with probable road closures. Start time is 7:05 a.m. Route begins downtown and proceeds through Westport, Brookside, and turns back north at 75th Street. Full marathon will end mid-afternoon. Please visit kcmarathon.org for more detailed information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Richard Mabian, and it's been quite a show up to now, and I hope that all of you got something out of it. We're doing some things here in Kansas City, and it's good to see the people have a chance to be able to share with you what's going on and keep you updated on their activities. So now we're getting ready to get ready for this part that I'm going to bring you. The first thing I'm going to do is tell you I'm opening my lines. I'm opening up the phone, so if you have anything that you would like to share or ask during this segment, just feel free to call. The number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. And what I'll do and start by introducing my guest. Would you introduce yourself, Klaus?
Yeah, I'm Klaus Wozenick. I'm with the Sierra Club, and I'm the political chair of the local group in Kansas City, Missouri, with the Thomas Hart Benton Group.
All right, so you with the Sierra Club. That's what this show, from this point to the end, is going to be about. The reason for that, as you know, I'm a Kansas Sierra Club board member, and we've achieved some things in Kansas, and Missouri Sierra Club is in the process of starting campaigns. And so I was asked to come over to do my part over here in helping to educate you on what the Sierra Club is doing. And that's exactly what this show is about. Consider this the beginning. I don't expect you to lead this show as an expert. I expect you to lead this show wanting to know more. The first thing I'm going to talk about to kind of set the pace, Missouri is dependent on imported coal. I'll say that again. Missouri is dependent on imported coal. I was shocked when I got to look at the figure, the amount of money that Missouri pays a year on coal, and all of it's imported. Here's the figure: $1.13 billion. $1.13 billion of Missouri's money is being spent out of state on coal. I want to back that up. 1.6 of that $1 billion is being spent in Wyoming. In just one state. I know we have to be making Wyoming rich. We got to be that gross national product. Missouri is dependent on imported coal. When you look at the figures that I got here, that shows how much of our energy in Missouri comes from coal. 81.3% of the energy that we have here in the state of Missouri is coming from coal. Then it's downhill from that. I bet the next highest is 10.4% for nuclear. Then you have 5.7% for natural gas. And then everything else is below 3. So that's just showing you what this city or this state is dealing with. Now, you know, I know renewable energy is the buzzword of the nation, of the planet. And here we are in Missouri with those kind of figures based on coal. So that's what we're going to talk about this evening. Just kind of an outline of what the Missouri Sierra Club have planned as far as strategies are concerned to combat this use of coal in the state. I have a list of things here that we're going to start with. And I'm going to read them off, and then Klaus is going to fill us in on what he can about the details. Remember, we're all learning from this point on. Energy efficiency. Demand that Kansas City Power and Light file an energy efficiency plan under something that's called MEEIA to make energy efficiency benefits available to customers in Kansas City. Okay, Klaus, you want to explain what that was saying?
Yeah, well, MEEIA is the Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act that was passed several years ago in the Missouri House, and that's available to companies like Kansas City Power and Light, Ameren UE, to provide energy efficiency features or measures to customers. And Kansas City Power and Light has two areas. There's one that's the Kansas City core area that's mostly the urban area, and then it has a general Missouri operations area that is in the outlying areas, more the past the suburbs and part of the suburbs. And Kansas City Power and Light has offered these programs previously to both of those areas. They have recently stopped offering the energy efficiency plans to the Kansas City Power and Light area that's in the Kansas City, Missouri area. So we were wanting to see Kansas City Power and Light to reestablish those efficiency plans so they can be offered to customers.
Okay. Now let me see if I understand this, because this is kind of what was the first thing that I heard that caught my attention. The plan was the law or policy or whatever it was they passed, this MEEIA, was designed for all customers, correct?
Yes.
Initially, that's what Kansas City Power and Light intended on doing, servicing all customers. But are you saying they reached a point where they cut off service to certain geographic area?
Well, they stopped offering those energy efficiency incentives to the customers in the Kansas City Power and Light area, which is the core area of Kansas City, Missouri.
And this other thing you talked about, kind of explain that GMO. I think that's what it's called, isn't it?
GMO is pretty much the other half of the Kansas City Power and Light service area that's not the core area. So it's St. Joseph. It goes over to Blue Springs. It's parts of, beyond Independence, Grain Valley. It's basically the areas that are not Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay.
It's the general Missouri operations area.
Wow. So they kept those services going in the GMO areas, right?
Well, they keep providing the energy efficiency benefits to those customers, yes, in those areas, but not Kansas City, Missouri.
I'm going to enjoy working with you all. I really feel that, you know, one of the things that I pride myself in is being able to generate enthusiasm and interest from your everyday ma and pa. You know, we got these people out here in these organizations like Kloss and them working real hard to deal with these policymakers about these issues, to deal with Kansas City Power and Light about the audacity of them to even do something like that. And boy, I'll tell you what I would love to be able to see a group of you standing in solidarity with these people. And that's what I'm hoping that these kind of subjects will bring to bear. I do know that I see on here where it's saying, I saw you mention the Blue Springs and Lee Summit and Belton areas have the GMO. But it's also saying that if people want more information about this, they can call the office number. Is that the Sierra Club office number?
They can call the Sierra Club office, the Missouri Sierra Club, and they're located in St. Louis, and the number is 800-628-5333. Or they can look on the web under missouri.sierraclub.org.
You know, I think I'm going to talk to Mike and see about us putting something on our Facebook page or something that relates to that particular number we just gave out. I think maybe that's if you wanted more information about the Missouri Sierra Club's working strategy, you can call this number or do what you just said. Look up that website. We might be able to do that. We'll work on that on our end. Now, I'm going to go to the next one out here. All of this we're talking about relates to the air pollution area, the air pollution problem. Clean air and clean water are probably two of our most major concerns in this country. The third one would be the food that we eat. That's why that Monsanto thing this past weekend was so important. And everyone's not going to be able to live in a situation where you got your goats and your donkeys and the various substances this season was talking about that other folks out here are doing. So we have to make sure that the air that we breathe and that this water that we're drinking, it rids itself of the pollution that we are dealing with, and that's what's coming from the fossil fuel that's being burned in these coal-fired plants. So I noticed it said something here that EPA, according to EPA, now you're going to have to pronounce this plant, make sure I get it right, Latan?
It's Ayatan.
Ayatan. Plant. Where is that located?
It's close to Weston. It's just a little bit north of Weston.
So that's in our geographic area.
Yes.
Okay, so Ayatan.
Kansas City Power and Light just recently built, it's an older power plant. Kansas City Power and Light just recently built a secondary plant to add additional power to that power plant.
In the vicinity?
It's in that same complex. Yes.
Okay.
And it's called Ayatan 2. And it has a lot more power than the previous power plant.
Now, the reason I'm bringing this up, EPA says this Ayatan plant is the second largest source of CO2 in the entire state of Missouri.
Yes, it's a pretty big power plant.
You know, people, I'm very honest with you. I'm going to throw out this number to you again, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. I mean, I cannot get away from getting you to focus in on the issue here that as a state, we're blowing $1.5 billion on coal that we're buying from out of state to come here and create a pollution count that we, this in our geographic area, we have the second largest source of CO2 in the entire state.
And it's not just CO2, it's other pollutants as well. It's nitrous oxide and it's sulfur, let's see, SO2, I don't remember all the pollutants, but there are other pollutants that cause asthma.
Right.
And they are basically limiting people's lives if they live in the vicinity or in the area that, well, it's a pretty large area. There are lots of other power plants that contribute to these different pollutants, and they all have effects on asthma and other health side effects.
The Missouri Energy or this plan, this MEA plan, came up with a pretty lengthy document that has things laid out, and we're going to bring this to you. It's my desire, not even my desire, it's my promise to you, commitment to you as a resident of Kansas City, Missouri, to have at least one show a month with the Missouri Sierra Club, excuse me. And so it's going to be a learning process for us. We're going to make it something, we're going to make sure that each one of those programs is taking a topic and exploring it with you, just like this MEA plan. There's no way I'd try to do it tonight, and there's no way that I would try to do it all in one night. But we're going to take different sections of it, and we'll just have discussions about it. I mean, we may not be experts. We may have to get someone on the phone that knows a little bit more about it than we do to help explain to you what it is we're talking about. But one of the reasons in that plan, they have a section that's designated education. And they talk in terms of, hold on just a sec. Someone just called in. Caller, you on the air. Will you give us your first name and the part of the city you're calling from, please?
Okay, my name is Anthony, and I'm calling from Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay, Anthony, what's the guy do for you?
Okay, you have a very important show,
uh-huh.
And we only see you once a month, but you were on last Monday, too, which was a good thing, if I remember right.
Uh-huh.
But what you're trying to talk about and what you're trying to do, it cannot be done in this little bit of length of time that you have. If they're going to put you on once a month, at least give you 2 hours. At least 2 hours.
They're going to think y'all paid you, Anthony, but thank you. I appreciate that. No, sir, let's call this the beginning. You hear what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's not like something that you can accomplish in an hour. But, you know, we can generate enough interest that if these organizations like the Missouri Sierra Club is in a position that they can start holding rallies and having sessions and having workshops or something that people can have a chance to attend, I commit myself to you that we're going to start doing that in Kansas City. Okay, brother?
Okay.
That's a promise to you coming from me.
Okay. You know, this is one thing that I think might be able to help.
What's that?
That before you have the rallies, places where businesses where people meet, where you can set flyers out.
Okay.
And ask the public to freely take 10 or 15, 20 flyers and put them somewhere where somebody can see them and read them.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Use the community to help distribute the information.
I love that in you, brother. I tell you what, you got a computer, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you make sure you check out our Facebook page, all right?
Because
what we're going to start doing, we'll make sure on the show that we will tell you that we didn't put a notice on the Facebook page. And when you see that, you contact us. And I'll personally make sure, since you're over there in Wyandotte County, we get some of them flyers in your hand, okay?
Okay.
All right, brother. Thanks for calling. I appreciate you. And keep listening. Tell your friends about us, too, okay? Okay. As I was saying, they have a section in there that's geared toward education. And the first thing it says that this MIA plan is about cultural change in Missouri to reverse cultural trends of a lack of public support for innovation, technology, and education. The young man that just called in was saying that, you know, he sees a need to learn. Want to learn, and I think that's what this MIA plan was designed to do. I don't want to run out of time. I'm not gonna do that real easy, boy. Don't get me started. Retiring plants. One thing I wanted to mention on that air pollution. Listen at these figures. I don't know where these plants are, but Cross does, so I'll let him tell you. One of them is the Meltrose. Is how you say that?
Montrose
coal fired plant causes 30. Premature death a year, plus 510 asthma attacks a year. What's the next one? Sibley.
It's a Sibley plant. It's about 50 miles downstream from Kansas City, Missouri.
Where was the Montrose plant?
Montrose is about 50 miles straight south of Kansas City.
Straight south. The Sibley plant, it causes 9 deaths and 150 asthma attacks. Now, here you go. We got one in Blue Valley plant.
And that's between Independence and Blue Springs.
Okay, between Independence and Blue Springs. And it's causing people 11 deaths and 200 asthma attacks a year. Yes, we need to get these plants closed. Now, you know, the Kansas City, Kansas Board of Public Utility recently announced an agreement with the Sierra Club, the Kansas Sierra Club, to retire a coal fire plant. Missouri, the plant is in, what's that? Chamois?
I think that's on the St. Louis side.
On the St. Louis side? Well, they have a plant in Missouri that is set to close in the fall. Our area is moving from dirty coal to clean energy. Wind energy, you know, it's saying here the Kansas City area is close to high quality wind resource and should be expanding our use of wind, which is cheaper than coal and better for the environment. So folks, like we said, we wasn't going to try to come in here and whip the horse tonight. I really came in to introduce the Missouri Sierra Club, what it's about, and what we're going to plan to do. I'm going to give them my 100% effort, and we want to see if we can't get more people like Anthony that sees the value in learning from what we're trying to do. So I'm going to leave you at that tonight, Klaus. I really appreciate you coming in, man, and taking the time. I mean, you become my expert in Missouri. I know you're going to say you don't want to be there, but that's what you are, and I appreciate you. Before I go, and I got to run fast, I got two things to share with you. One, there's some money available over here in Kansas City, Missouri for weatherization assistance program. We're going to put something on our Facebook page about that. If you, from what I gather, you got to get this money spent. And so there's not a whole lot of time involved, but make sure that you check us out and see what it is. If you can't find it, there's a number you can call to find out more about it. And that's 816-842-5600, extension 304. Call and ask them about the weatherization program. And, Mike, I'm going to leave it at that, brother, so we don't run out of time and we'll be able to complete what we have to do, okay?
All right. Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Klaus, for a very informative show. I do want to remind folks that if our shows are now posted on our KKFI.org website. So if you missed the beginning of the show, you can go back tomorrow. We should have it up sometime at KKFI.org. More than 50 people downloaded and listened to last week's Eco Radio program.
From 7:30 to 9:30 tomorrow morning, the Kansas City Industrial Council presents its annual Sustainability Awards Breakfast, where KCIC will recognize the green efforts of businesses located in Kansas City's industrial areas with sustainability awards. In addition, there will be a panel discussion on sustainability and your bottom line. Panelists are Kansas City Mayor Sly James, John McDonald of Boulevard Brewing, Danny O'Neill with The Roastery, and Carol Hallquist with Hallmark Cards. The event is at the Roastery Bean Hanger, 1204 West 27th Street in KCMO. Tickets can be purchased at kciconline.com. Tomorrow evening at 6:30 p.m., Village Presbyterian Church will host a workshop they're calling Strategic Environmental Security: What in the World is Worth Fighting For? The class should be of interest to anyone seeking a better understanding of the science of environmental security, and it will create the opportunity for the group to debate and discuss what should drive government planning and decision-making. No specific background is needed beyond an interest in the topic. That's at Village Presbyterian Church, 6641 Mission Road in Prairie Village. For details and to enroll in the course, visit villagepres.org or call 913-671-2333. At 9 a.m. here on KKFI on Thursday, join Tell Somebody, where they'll be discussing with guest Michael J. Prather the IPCC's fifth assessment report on climate change, which was released on September 27th. The New York Times reported on what it called the report's near certainty that humans are responsible for the rising temperatures of recent decades. That's 9 a.m. here on KKFI. Tell Somebody. Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m., the Master Gardeners of Greater Kansas City will present Sustainably Designed Food Growing. Michael Allman of the Kansas Permaculture Collaborative and the Sustainability Action Network will speak about creating an ecologically sound, economically prosperous human community that is guided by the ethical care for the earth, care for people, reducing waste, sharing the surplus, and working towards a sustainable future. The presentation will be at the Kauffman Foundation Conference Center, 4801 Rock Hill Road in KCMO. It is free and open to the public. No registration required. For further information, call 816-665-4456 or visit mggkc.org. Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to noon, the Sustainable Sanctuary Coalition will host an electronics waste recycling event at Village Presbyterian Church, 6641 Mission Road in Prairie Village. Safely dispose of old, obsolete, or broken electronics sitting around your home at Sustainable Sanctuary Coalition's electronic recycling event and fundraiser. Drop off your unwanted or unused e-waste, computers, components, printers, copiers, TVs, cell phones, and AV equipment. Small appliances in good working condition will also be accepted. Goodwill will refurbish what they can for resale and safely recycle the rest. Save precious resources and keep toxins out of the landfills. For more information, visit sskc.org. And this Sunday, from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., the Home Energy Fair will help area residents receive face-to-face information about home energy efficiency upgrades, including energy audits, insulation, windows, water heaters, permitting information, and more. Save money and energy with simple home upgrades. More than 15 vendors will be on hand at the Sylvester Powell Jr. Community Center, 6200 Martway Street in Mission, Kansas. The fair is free and open to the public. For a complete list of vendors and for more information, visit missionks.org. Thanks for joining us today on Eco Radio KC. I'm Susan Burnett, and that was your calendar of events.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Hola, buenas noches, and welcome to this edition of Dialogo Alberto and Sabo Latino Live on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, featuring the boss, Betty Norris, Chaparita, and yours truly, Oweto Paisa. And now, the woman who has more shoes than Imelda Marcos, here is Betty Norris. Hola, Betty.
How much are the who?
She used to be the president's wife of the Philippines.
Oh, my God.
She's known for her... her amount of shoes.
And I have more?
I think you're close.
I was.